From Feature Story News in Washington and our bureaus around the world, this is FSN Reports. I'm Kevin McAleese. On today's programme, Warsaw warning. President Obama threatens Russia with costly consequences if Moscow's role in the Ukrainian crisis continues.
Bigger nations must not be allowed to bully the small or impose their will at the barrel of a gun or with masked men taking over buildings. And the stroke of a pen can never legitimize the theft of a neighbor's land.
Also today, pomp and ceremony. The British government's agenda is set out in the Queen's speech. And 25 years after the Tiananmen Square massacre, we're in Hong Kong for a record-breaking vigil.
People who turned up today in Hong Kong, 180,000. If that's true, that would be the largest ever protest to commemorate Tiananmen Square in this territory.
That's coming up on FSN Reports after our latest summary of the day's headlines.
From Feature Story News in Washington, I'm Rebecca Foster. U.S. President Barack Obama has spoken out against Russian aggression during his trip to Poland, marking the 25th anniversary of the end of communism in the country. During his speech, Barack Obama said the U.S. views Poland as one of its closest and strongest allies. He also said more military cooperation and an increased U.S. military presence in Europe were necessary to defend America and its allies. Mr. Obama added that Russia will never get U.S. approval for its occupation of Crimea.
The days of empire and spheres of influence are over. Bigger nations must not be allowed to bully the small or impose their will at the barrel of a gun or with masked men taking over buildings. And the stroke of a pen can never legitimize the theft of a neighbor's land. So we will not accept Russia's occupation of Crimea or its violation of Ukraine's sovereignty. Our free nations will stand united so that further Russian provocations will only mean more isolation and cost for Russia.
Record numbers of people have gathered in central Hong Kong for a vigil to mark 25 years since China's bloody crackdown on peaceful protesters in Beijing's Tiananmen Square. Chinese authorities have been trying to censor the anniversary with the detention of activists and critics alongside tighter internet controls. China Bureau Chief for The Washington Post, Simon Denyer, says emotions were running high in Hong Kong.
The organizers put the number of people who turned up today in Hong Kong at 180,000. If that's true, that would be the largest ever protest to commemorate Tiananmen Square in this territory. And it was a very moving ceremony, a very moving remembrance, and quite a lot of anger as well at the Chinese Communist Party.
The Taliban have released video footage reportedly showing the moment Sergeant Bo Bergdahl was released in an exchange deal. The 28-year-old had been held by the Taliban for 5 years and was freed after the U.S. secured his release in exchange for 5 detainees held in Guantanamo Bay. Our correspondent Natalie Powell reports.
The unconfirmed handover video is being seen as Taliban propaganda. In it, we see Sergeant Bo Bergdahl waiting in a truck surrounded by several armed insurgents whose faces are covered. The exchange took place in the Ali Sher district of Khost province near the Pakistan border. The video shows several Pakistan-based militants in the surrounding areas with heavy machine guns and rocket-propelled grenades. A U.S. Black Hawk helicopter lands nearby, and Sergeant Bergdahl, wearing white traditional dress, is escorted to the aircraft and taken inside, where he's taken away by U.S. forces.
From bureaus worldwide, this is FSN. Germany's federal prosecutor has opened an investigation into allegations that the U.S. monitored German Chancellor Angela Merkel's cell phone. The news came in advance of a meeting between Merkel and U.S. President Barack Obama at a G7 summit in Brussels. The U.S. government has imposed expanded import tariffs on Chinese solar panels, increasing the stakes in a simmering trade dispute. The preliminary ruling will oblige Chinese firms to pay duties of between 18 and 35%. From Washington, Daniel Wrenches reports.
The German manufacturer SolarWorld, which has a panel factory in the state of Oregon, won a case in 2012 but filed a second complaint when it became clear that some Chinese firms were circumventing the duties by shifting aspects of production to Taiwan. The preliminary ruling imposes countervailing duties of between 18 and 35% for what the Commerce Department believes are unfair government subsidies in China. However, the majority of US solar industry players oppose bringing the case, arguing it increases costs for consumers and makes it harder to compete against other fuel sources.
And Brazilian President Dilma Rousseff has defended the government's work and rate of spending on the upcoming World Cup. The games kick off in the country on June 12th, but could be marred by protests against the high toll World Cup preparations have been taking on taxpayers. Andre Arenas reports.
Brazil's President Dilma Rousseff has insisted that despite massive criticism about infrastructure delays and protests, the World Cup will be a great success. Only a week away from kickoff, President Rousseff said that there is a possibility that there will be a resurgence of anti-government protests during the days of the tournament. However, she says that any demonstrations will not be allowed to disrupt the games. Brazil's government has so far spent $11 billion on the soccer tournament.
And that's the latest from Feature Story News. Rebecca Foster reporting.
From Feature Story News in Washington, I'm Kevin McAleese. Welcome to FSN Reports. US President Barack Obama's been in Poland as part of his European tour today, where he delivered a powerful speech warning Russia against its actions in Ukraine. Additionally, 2 days of NATO talks are wrapping up in Brussels, where Mr. Obama took part in G7 talks. Our Europe correspondent Jack Parrock reports.
US President Barack Obama visited Poland for celebrations marking the 25th anniversary of the end of communist rule in the country. He used the stage to deliver a speech in which he strongly condemned Russia for trying to destabilize European security.
The days of empire and spheres of influence are over. Bigger nations must not be allowed to bully the small or impose their will at the barrel of a gun or with masked men taking over buildings. And the stroke of a pen can never legitimize the theft of a neighbor's land. So we will not accept Russia's occupation of Crimea or its violation of Ukraine's sovereignty. Our free nations will stand united so that further Russian provocations will only mean more isolation and cost for Russia.
It comes amid a further deterioration of the situation in Ukraine, with reports of pro-Russian rebels capturing military bases in the eastern Ukraine region of Luhansk. Mr. Obama announced on Tuesday a $1 billion European military fund for the US to bolster its presence in Europe.
Additional US forces in the air and sea and on land, and it will mean increased support to help friends like Ukraine and Moldova and Georgia provide for their own defense.
Meanwhile, the NATO military alliance reasserted its commitment to helping Ukraine. The United States Secretary of Defense, Chuck Hagel, spoke after 2 days of meetings with his counterparts at the alliance to outline the continued support for Ukraine.
We will continue to stand united against Russia's aggression in Crimea and its destabilizing actions in eastern Ukraine. And we're still carefully monitoring Russia's military presence along the Ukrainian border.
The end of the NATO meetings in Brussels coincide with the beginning of another, the G7 talks which Russia was excluded from due to its actions in Crimea. The leaders of the world's biggest economies are expected to set out demands for Russian President Vladimir Putin to work with newly elected Ukrainian President Petro Poroshenko to reduce tensions. Ahead of the opening dinner, the European Union's Council President Herman Van Rompuy said further economic sanctions against Russia are still on the table.
At this stage, we consider that we have some possibilities, diplomatic and political possibilities, to see if Russia is ready to engage more and to stop the destabilization in Ukraine. So it is an assessment that we are making on a regular basis, but at this stage we say we only continue the preparations.
Mr. Van Rompuy also said the G7 would not rule out seeing Russia returning to the G8 club if Moscow makes visible efforts to appease the situation in Ukraine by agreeing to negotiate with Ukraine's new president and removing all troops from the region. Talks here in Brussels will continue Thursday, after which President Obama will head to France to mark 70 years since the D-Day landings of the Second World War. Jack Parrock, Brussels.
This is FSN Reports. The Chinese government has been doing its best to bury the 25th anniversary of the bloody crackdown on peaceful protesters in Beijing's Tiananmen Square. Journalists and activists, many detained ahead of June 4th, have been barred from entering the square amid a tight security presence. The censorship by Chinese authorities has extended to the internet, with reports of search terms being blocked and access to search engines restricted. Meanwhile, tens of thousands of people packed Hong Kong's Victoria Park to show their support for those killed in 1989. Washington Post correspondent Simon Denyer joined me from Hong Kong.
The organisers put the number of people who turned up today in Hong Kong at 180,000. If that's true, that would be the largest ever protest to commemorate Tiananmen Square in this territory. And it really does. It was certainly tens of thousands of people, put it like that. And it was a very moving ceremony, a very moving remembrance, and quite a lot of anger as well at the Chinese Communist Party. And as you probably know, Hong Kong and China are somewhat at loggerheads at the moment over democracy in Hong Kong. And some of that emotion came out today as well.
And that outpouring of public remembrance, in stark contrast to what was actually happening at the scene of that massacre 25 years ago.
Absolutely. Complete and utter lockdown at Tiananmen Square. And to be honest, it's been lockdown for some time now. A lot of the people who journalists would seek out to talk to about what happened in 1989 have been under arrest, have been rounded up weeks and weeks before this happened to stop people getting to them. The arrests continued right up until today, up until the anniversary. So very tense. Google's search engine was almost entirely blocked in the days running up to this. A real attempt by the Chinese authorities to silence any comment, any remembrance, any talk of June the 4th in mainland China.
So you talk about this censorship, this attempt by the Chinese authorities to airbrush the massacre from history. And of course, that Google crackdown being part of that. But is there a sense that people are remembering those events of 1989 in the broader mainland China?
It's very, very hard to say the level of awareness. There's a small museum that's just opened in Hong Kong commemorating June 4th events. And I went there earlier today, actually. There are hundreds of people packed into this tiny room. It could only fit a few dozen at a time, but hundreds came through today. And I spoke to a few mainland Chinese people who'd come. And the organisers of the museum said that around half the people who attend are actually from the mainland. And I spoke to them, and, there were sort of different stories. What came through is they said that not many of the people they know of really know what happened. People can find out if they want to find out. There are ways of getting around internet censorship. So people who want to find out can, but a lot of people just don't really know and don't make the effort to find out. So I think it is partially successful, the Chinese government's attempt, but obviously people do know that something happened, and that it's very, very hard, given that one can't talk about it, it's very hard to have a clear idea of how many people know.
Washington Post correspondent Simon Denyer in Hong Kong. Now, Britain's Queen Elizabeth II has unveiled her government's legislative plans for the coming year. The state opening of Parliament saw her announce the laws the coalition government aims to pass before a general election in May 2015. The Conservative Liberal Democrat coalition says it will be unashamedly pro-work and pro-business. Opposition Labour say the speech will show the government has run out of ideas and is only promising more of the same. Reporter Tom Swarbrick has been looking at the history of the event and what it all symbolises.
It's all about the pomp today. You've got your crowns, your jewels, your crown jewels, your red carpets, your wigs and symbolism. So much symbolism. Perhaps the best known protagonist in this theatrical display, other than Her Majesty, of course, is Black Rod. He's the chap who, for reasons best known only to him, slams the door of the Commons three times. Actually, those reasons are known. I'll explain them now. Gentleman Usher of the Black Rod goes by another name, David. David Leake, to be precise. He's a former British military commander. He's appointed by Her Majesty, and to simplify his noble position, he's like a caretaker, but one who can arrest any lord guilty of breach of privilege or other parliamentary offence such as contempt or disorder or the disturbance of the House's proceedings. There have been around 60 gentlemen usher of the Black Rod since the office was created in 1350. This is what he does. Walking carefully from the House of Lords through the lobby down towards the House of Commons, his black rod or mace in his right hand, he looks as if he's about to walk happily into the Commons when the door is shut in his face. This is quite a moment. Dates back to 1642. Why this music is playing. This is the year when Charles I, angered by five members of Parliament whom apparently encouraged Scotland to invade, stormed into the Commons with a load of soldiers and attempted to arrest the men. He even sat in the Speaker's chair. The slamming of the door represents the House of Commons' independence from the sovereign. Rod, with a face full of door, then has to get some attention. He hits it really quite hard, three times with the mace. He's then let in. He enters the House of Commons, bows a few times, walks to the centre of the House and addresses the Speaker.
Mr. Speaker, the Queen commands this Honourable House.
Bows to the government benches, bows to the opposition benches.
To attend Her Majesty immediately in the House of Peers.
He's then subjected to an odd little ritual brought about by Dennis Skinner MP, who always has something acerbic, witty, condescending to say to Mr. Rod as he steps aside.
No royal commissions this week.
Any Tory moles at the palace.
Jubilee year, double dip recession, what a start.
He's been doing this since the late 80s, I believe. The members then file out of the House of Commons down to the Lords to hear what is, in effect, a speech they have already written. But it's proper good pomp.
Britain's LBC radio reporter Tom Swarbrick. And for a look at the general health of British politics in the light of the Queen's speech and heading for next year's election, I spoke to FSN's Ollie Barrett.
I think it's fair to say this is not the most exciting, perhaps, legislative programme that's ever been revealed by a government. But the coalition is entering a difficult phase now, 11 months to go before a general election. The Conservatives and the Liberal Democrats very keen to prove that they can continue to work together, but at the same time they have to acknowledge that they are beginning to campaign against each other as well, ahead of the May 2015 general election here in the UK. And these are genuinely uncharted waters, given that this is the first coalition government here in the UK since the war. So very difficult times for the two parties in that coalition, the leading party, the Conservatives, and the minority party, the Liberal Democrats, because they want to prove that this coalition still has business to do and can do that business, but at the same time, both parties well aware that the campaign trail will begin hotting up very soon and they will be fighting against each other, will be becoming enemies at the same time as partners.
So examining the content of the Queen's speech, putting that aside, is this still a closely watched ceremonial event?
Yeah, all of the pomp and ceremony, which, depending on your persuasion, is what Britain does best, or is anachronistic and irrelevant and out of date and should be done away with. Certainly, the tourists have turned out in great number here at Westminster to see the soldiers and the royal procession through the streets, the Queen leaving in a carriage after delivering her speech, cheered by the crowds, waving at them, Prince Charles and Camilla seen as well, and the crown jewels driven by horse through the streets of central London. So this is an event which certainly still brings out the crowds, although, as I say, in terms of legislation, it's perhaps fair to say that this isn't the most exciting Queen's speech there has ever been here at Westminster, and the Queen has delivered quite a lot of them over the years.
Ollie Barrett in London. And finally, FSN Spotlight, the segment of the show where we try to bring you a story you might have missed, with today's edition, Simon Marks.
On FSN Spotlight today, Game Over's use, the new computer virus that anti-crime agencies on both sides of the Atlantic are trying to stop. Earlier this week, the FBI unsealed an indictment charging a Russian computer hacker operating from Ukraine with racketeering, wire fraud, identity theft, and a host of other criminal charges. Yevgeny Bogachev remains at large and is now on the agency's most wanted list. The Game Over's use malware is already believed to have infected up to 1 million computers on both sides of the Atlantic, with another wave expected to hit in 2 weeks' time. Stuart Garrett is the senior investigating officer on the National Cybercrime Unit of the UK's National Crime Agency, and he discussed the threat with James O'Brien of Britain's LBC Radio.
It's not coming in 2 weeks' time. These infections are already on at least 15,800 computers across the UK today. All we've managed to do is effectively buy some time so that those computers can't communicate back with the criminals who've been controlling them. And it is a serious risk. I mean, it's everybody should be concerned about it, and everybody should be taking sensible steps to clean their machines.
What will it do if you don't clean it from your machine, or if you fail to contain it in this way?
Okay, well, what we're looking at here is a combined attack against anybody and everyone. I keep making the point this is utterly indiscriminate. Although it is slanted towards small and medium enterprises and individual users, it can affect any computer that isn't updated, patched, or someone has clicked on a link on an email not being wary enough. There are two pieces of malicious software, we call it malware, that are attacking people's computers. The first is Game Over Zeus, also known as Peer-to-Peer Zeus. And what that does, it's a banking Trojan. It will infect your computer from a link on an email if you've clicked on it thinking it was from a friend or from your bank or whatever. And it will sit on your computer silently until you go to a secure website, and then it will start logging your credentials. So it gives the criminals the ability to access your bank account, transfer your money elsewhere. What's more, they do that silently, and they can remotely control your computer. So anything you can do on your computer, they can do on their computer remotely.
So this would involve initially clicking on a link contained within an email that you were not familiar with. You might have thought you were familiar with it, but you would be clicking on something that you shouldn't.
Exactly. But there are three main ways that people's computers get infected. The first is a link on an email, which is how this particular threat is being spread. And the emails are deliberately designed to look genuine. They will what we call spoof the email address. So they'll look like they've come from your bank or they've come from somebody you know in your address book. And if you click on that link, it might say, find your receipt attached, or here's the voicemail, or that document you wanted, that sort of hook. And if you click on it, what it's actually doing is installing this malicious software in the background onto your computer.
How do you know? I mean, that's a really specific number you put on it, 15,800, I think you said. How have you found those? How do you know about those?
I'm afraid this is at least that.
Yes.
Because what we've been able to do is identify how many computers in the UK are calling out, but we can only identify them by the what's known as the Internet Protocol address, the IP address, which will take it down to a router. So if you think in your house, you might have five computers hanging off of the one router, which then connects to the Internet. So we know this because working in partnership with security advisors and the FBI, etc., we have been able to get an insight into the way the network works.
So you can see the smoke signals coming out of the infected computers?
That would say that's a very good way of putting it. And certainly one of the things that we are doing over the coming couple of weeks is we will be monitoring computers in the UK that are trying to contact their criminal masters, if you like, and reporting that information back to internet service providers and to banks so that hopefully we can protect as many people as we possibly can. But what I would emphasise is at the end of the 2 weeks, if you haven't cleaned your machine and you're still running an unpatched computer, then you risk your computer being contacted again by the criminals and a different form of malicious software being put across it.
Imagine for a moment that someone listening to this doesn't know what cleaning your machine or unpatched computer means.
This is one of the hardest things with this message, because normally our audience is a geek audience, if you like, yes. People who understand these sort of things. This is really for everyday users. So there is a very good website. It's having a bit of difficulty because of the interest in this story, but getsafeonline.org is battling to get their website back up, if it's not already as we're speaking. On there is some really, really good plain English advice on how to clean your computer, secure your computer, and some links to various tools that have been written by a variety of companies who have been working in partnership with us, specifically to clean these two malicious pieces of malware off. But this is as much about developing good habits, yes, for when you're using a computer online. So we're really encouraging people to make sure that they install the updates on their Windows software, or any software for that matter, but you update it, because those patches are pushed out, they're provided by the companies to address the security risk.
So the patches are like the updates, they're like the sort of invitation you often receive to bring up your software to the latest.
And we all do it, we get frustrated, it takes time, so we click no. But the fact is, you need to have those, because as soon as an update is sent out across the internet for an operating system, that's also telling cyber criminals where vulnerabilities exist. So you really should be saying yes to those updates when they come from Windows, when they come from Adobe, when they come from any of your software that you're running. You should keep it as up to date as possible.
And finally, has anyone actually been robbed yet? Has anyone been a victim of crime as a result of this specific software? This GoZeus.
The GoZeus is the first element of it, yes. And our estimates are certainly hundreds of millions of pounds have been taken from victims globally, and potentially as much as £500 million has gone in the past year to this crime group, just from the peer-to-peer Zeus, or GoZeus as it's called, or Game Over Zeus.
We only booked you for 10 minutes. I could talk to you all day. Do we know anything about the criminals behind it?
Well, you'll see that the FBI yesterday unsealed an indictment on Evgeny Bogachev, who's believed to be the creator of this, yes, and the associated software. It basically, he's got a fallback position. So if he can't steal enough money out of your bank account, or this crime group can't, there is a fallback position where they can use a thing called CryptoLocker. And what that piece of software does is it encrypts all of your personal created files, your documents, your pictures, whatever, and then demands a ransom to be paid before they'll send you a decryption key to get your files back. So this is really a two-pronged attack against, wow, people across the globe using these two pieces of malicious software.
That's Stuart Garrett of Britain's National Crime Agency. On this side of the Atlantic, the US government has posted advice to consumers about how to protect your computer against the malware. You can find those tips at www.us-cert.gov. It's a mouthful, so we've tweeted a link to the site on our Twitter account. You can find us there at Feature Story. With FSN Spotlight, I'm Simon Marks.
And that's the Wednesday edition of FSN Reports. Coming up on Thursday, reinventing the role of the state. Why Western democracy could be in peril without radical reforms. That's Thursday, but for now, I'm Kevin McAleese in Washington, alongside producer Simon Marks and Rebecca Foster on the Bulletin Desk. For everyone, with Feature Story news everywhere, have a great evening. Goodbye.